I want to talk to you about primary prevention, which I think is really consistent with a lot of the previous talks, in that if we can prevent some of these long work hours, look at the amount of disease we might be able to prevent. I want to recognize my co-authors, Polly Hoppen and Molly Jacobs at UMass Lowell and the Center for Sustainable Production, and my colleagues who with whom I work on surveillance of work-related asthma. And asthma is a big deal. In Massachusetts and nationwide, there's more than 14,000 adults who are diagnosed with asthma every year in Massachusetts. And Massachusetts seems to be worse than the U.S. as a whole. And in fact, asthma affects people's lives. When people are surveyed, 74% of adults say their asthma is either not well controlled or very poorly controlled. So this affects quality of life. Work-related asthma makes up an important part of adult asthma. Again, on the BRFSS, Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System survey, when people are asked, has asthma ever caused or exacerbated your asthma? Has work done that? More than 40% reply that it has. So NIOSH funds Massachusetts and four other states to conduct surveillance of work-related asthma. And over the years, we found nearly 1,000, over 950 cases that we've confirmed as work-related asthma. So the workplace is really an important place to think about asthma because it offers some unique opportunities that I think can be applied more broadly. You know, you start off with people who are healthy enough to work. The exposures are somewhat easier to look at. They occur over time. They're more intensive than occur in the community and homes. You can actually look at asthma in a temporal way. You can ask people if asthma gets better when they're away from work. You can characterize those exposures. When I say cases can be removed and challenged, it means that if a physician says maybe it's work, you can take that person out of work, see if they get better, let them go back to work and see if they get worse. That's being challenged. And cohorts can be assessed for population risk. So there's a number of known asthma-causing agents. When I say known in the workplace, and these include high molecular weight things like animal proteins, plant proteins, baker's flour, latex, mold, and also low molecular weight chemicals. Well, really what I want to talk about is prevention. I mean, in public health, sometimes we lose track of our capacity to prevent disease in the first place. And primary prevention is actually protecting people, preventing disease in the absence of disease, before it even happens. Very hard to measure. You know, the fact that people might not get sick is hard to document. You know, more often in the workplace, we look at secondary prevention. You kind of find the folks who are starting to have problems and get them out of the situation. But I want to go further than that. But if you look at CDC and how CDC looks at asthma, they don't talk about primary prevention. If you look at their websites and the materials they present, they say asthma can be controlled, asthma cannot be cured, it's a lifelong disease, we don't know what causes asthma. And even in June of this year, in a webinar on the overlap between COPD and asthma, they say asthma, cause unknown. So in Massachusetts, we received grants from CDC, the National Center for Environmental Health, to look at asthma. And our asthma prevention program kind of went beyond just the idea of control. And they tried to say, well, we have goals, too, to reduce the environmental factors that cause or exacerbate asthma. And they came up with another goal, goal 4, which was to develop a roadmap for better understanding the causes of asthma and the role of primary prevention. Unfortunately, that grant is ending this year. The next round of CDC funding, which we received, doesn't even allow us to pay attention to the roadmap. But because of that roadmap, the folks at UMass Lowell, Polly and Molly, pulled together a group of people and sponsored a symposium, a two-day symposium in 2013 that aimed to look at the state of research on evidence, research needs, and opportunities for action, another important word, action, on asthma. And so the idea was they invited a lot of researchers in asthma and activists and folks in the community to kind of look at asthma, what do we know, and kind of how can we use what we know to take more steps to develop, you know, a 10 to 20 year strategy on primary prevention. And the important thing here, too, is if you look at that fourth bullet, the identification of modifiable risk factors. Which are the factors that might cause asthma that actually might do something to change? So they looked at, they invited presenters. They asked like nationwide known experts in 15 minutes to say, what's known about this risk factor and is it ready for action? So we looked at a range of different factors, and they were asked to present a summary of the data and which one should we really jump on and do something as a group nationwide. And so this is the list of some of the modifiable risk factors that we were looking at for asthma onset. So one of the more impressive presentations was by Dr. Snehal Shah at the Boston Public Health Commission, and she was looking actually at issues of disparities by race and ethnicity. So she kind of used this data to show that blacks and Latinos have more asthma, this is childhood asthma, you know, tracking it over years, than white kids. So she wanted us to know that because the model the Boston Public Health Commission put together was actually looking at racism as one of the modifiable risk factors that causes asthma, contributes to asthma. So while they have, you know, social and physical environments as part of their model, look at that, racism, kind of discriminatory practices, kind of affected their whole model. I thought it was an impressive presentation. So some of the other, impressive presentations, tobacco smoke is known to cause asthma. Doug Brugge presented that people immigrate from other countries to the U.S., their asthma rates go up. So we have to look at what are the factors for immigrants when they come here. Adult obesity, Carlos Camargo, Levy presentation, traffic-related air pollution. These are all known factors that cause asthma. And then again, Dr. Shah and Rosalind Wright actually found that exposure to violence as one of the components of stress contributes to the onset of asthma. You know, for us, workplace chemicals cause asthma. This is just something you could look at online, eWorld, the electronic work-related lung diseases, that show that the four states that have been conducting surveillance have found a number of things associated with work-related asthma, including miscellaneous chemicals, and certainly for Massachusetts, cleaning materials are actually moving up in our hit parade of the things that cause asthma. Talk about a modifiable risk factor. So, in fact, what I want to do is say, well, why, if we understand that work-related chemicals can cause asthma, how and why can't we use that to kind of push primary prevention in other places? So we have to look at work-related asthma is one of those models. You know, we know occupational focus, so we can clarify causation. We can look at that overlap, the social factors, the stress, whether it be on the job or exposure to violence or racism, how that interacts with the workplace chemicals. And then we have to realize that it's a complex of diseases or a complex disease, asthma. And so the factors that we have to take into consideration for prevention kind of cross a lot of areas. So, yes, asthma can be prevented. So why don't we get CDC to focus more on primary prevention? And what can we learn from work-related asthma? How can we bring what we know in the work-related area and bring it to bear on, more broadly, primary prevention? And so then what is the role for us in APHA, and how can we push CDC to do something? And there's only been a few chemicals where people have kind of recognized, like formaldehyde and Nephema trailers. Somehow that rose to the level of understanding, oops, we might be causing asthma where it had not existed. But the same is not true for some of the other cleaning chemicals, disinfectants, looking at schools. And so these kind of reminding us about the importance of chemical decision making. So my vision is we kind of need a neighborhood chemical watch, not a neighborhood crime watch, that we have to be aware that the things, the chemicals we use, promote, and look at, if we are more conscious about this, we might actually be able to prevent asthma in the same way we might be able to prevent a lot of chronic diseases by shortening our work hours. I think that would be good for asthma too. And so really, it's again, I use this chance, hopefully, to use science to rant about how we want to make CDC kind of more responsive to our needs for prevention and how the work-related area of study can really enhance our understanding of those issues. So, sorry for that speed.
Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm not saying that. CDC is in.
California is one of the states also, and there's a health cleaning for asthma state schools in California. So they've discovered that, I think it's like 70, I forget what the absenteeism rate is among school kids in California, but a lot of it's attributed to asthma. And I wonder how much of it is raised and how much of it is actually where low-income people live and the pollutants that they're exposed to that people, wealthier people are not exposed to.
Yeah, given the complexity of the disease, my guess is it's both, but, and Al knows this too, there's a number of things with aging school infrastructure, so you have poor conditions in the school, and then you have sometimes the cleaning products. Carlos Camargo spoke to that in that symposium, and we did. We picked the first 1,000 days was one of the places to focus attention. But were it not for the exposure, some people may be susceptible without ever expressing disease. So, and then again, once again, talk about cleaning products. Certainly the use of spray cleaners prior to delivery by pregnant women and post seem to be associated with the expression of asthma in children. So there are so many places where this understanding of both susceptibility and then were it not for the exposure, they might never have gotten sick.
Anybody else? Any other comments? Yeah, right here.
I guess what this issue, what we should be paying attention is, if we spend the same amount of time that we spend trying to relate exposures as opposed to figure out what are the alternatives to those exposures, we probably would be a lot better. Sometimes it's much easier than we think. It takes, obviously, organizing, it takes a lot more emphasis on the other part of science that we don't discuss very often, which is how you make change in our society. If we spend a bit more time with that, we would be able to maybe remove this exposure. And sometimes, as we did in a small scale with domestic workers, in Massachusetts, you find out that Back to the Future may be the solution. What did we do in the past to deal with the same issues, to clean places, or to use, when we didn't have these chemicals, what did we do? And in many cases, the solution is cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is, but you have to spend time doing that. And it's not easy to do unless you devote a fair amount of time to find out these alternatives, because they're not easy, they're not a given. So CDC does not spend any time, I shouldn't say any, but not enough time, to show us what's the alternative. We don't know the cause, what's the alternative for this? Because if John Snow had done what we are doing today, we would still not know how to solve the problem. So, Shut the supply.
Yeah, exactly. The pump chemicals.
Pump handle, as people say.
Yeah.
People have to look more for the handles than that we can shut.
Yeah.
In many cases, it takes a lot more effort that side than in the effort of measuring over and over and over to find the gene, the molecule, the chromosome. In the meantime, there are other stuff we could be doing around the
Did you want to say something?
I just wanted to, not so historical. This was just a factory where we had a cluster of work-related asthma cases in Massachusetts. They cleaned it up some, but we're only talking about 6-7 years ago that I saw these conditions. And I never saw so many asthmogens in one factory, and it was an all-immigrant workforce. It's like, something can be done. Something can be done.
Tommy?
I want workplaces to do what they can do. I want them to clean up.
Please, everybody, fill out your forms and leave them on the back or bring them up to me. I didn't mean to interrupt, we really need these things. Thanks.
Yeah. First of all, from a surveillance perspective, we're interested in rhinitis as an early indicator, maybe, that someone's at risk of developing asthma, but we can't conduct surveillance on it. It's just too widespread. But I think it raises the question that when people don't feel well, at work, after work, and feel better on vacation, take that seriously. It's not comfort, it's a symptom. So I think the point of paying attention to early disease, early symptoms is crucial. And certainly, tobacco causes asthma. We want to do what we can. But I do think that employers should focus on what they can do. And making the workplace as safe as possible is a noble and important and achievable thing, whether it's hours, chemicals, selection of chemicals. I did want to, one of those links at the end was for the whole symposium. If you want to look at those presentations, they're all available online, and I think it's really a remarkable and useful thing to look at. Yeah,
I'm trying to get to the last slide. Okay, any other comments? We do have a few more minutes. There we go.
Yeah. That second bullet, the sustainable production.
Okay, great. Any other comments? Yes.
So
get to talk about cleaning and disinfecting products. There were two papers withdrawn, so this afternoon at 4:30, I get to say more about cleaning and disinfecting.
I would just like to second what Eduardo said about, you know, obviously we need science and we need to figure out these mechanisms and truly do, but I'd just like to give the example in terms of knowing things and not doing anything. Yesterday there were two presentations on methylene chloride and furniture stripping and bathtub refinishing, and one of the doctors involved in that was Dennis Schusterman. He and I actually went to a furniture stripping place back in 1989, 25 years ago, wrote up a little article and showed the methylene chloride, you know, and what was happening. I even took little measurements inside the gloves to show that they were impervious, the chemicals were getting through. So here we have 25 years later, we're still talking about the same thing and getting methylene chloride out of furniture strippers when in fact we've known all that time that. So we really have to focus on action and trying to get, and now obviously they're showing that these other alternatives to that kind of stripper, but it sometimes takes a long time to get that stuff done. So any other comments? Or yeah, back there, sorry.
I'm an employee of CDC. I think it's good to keep the pressure up.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And fill out your forms, and you can leave them up here or leave them in the back. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.